This is The Guardian.
I'm Laura Murphy Oates, and this is The Full Story. The Morrison government has unveiled draft anti-trolling legislation that they say will protect vulnerable people like women and kids from online abuse by anonymous commenters or trolls. But concerns have been raised that the proposed bill, which makes it easier to unmask identities of people who post defamatory comments online, is less about protecting the average citizen and more about protecting the interests of the wealthy and powerful. Today, will the government's anti-trolling laws protect those who need it most? It's Thursday, the 9th of December. Okay, so Paul, when did we first hear about this social media legislation?
Well, the specifics were released at the end of November.
Paul Karp is a reporter for Guardian Australia.
When Prime Minister Scott Morrison and Attorney General Michaelia Cash made an announcement in Tuggeranong in the ACT.
Welcome to Tuggeranong. It is great to have you down here. Great to have the Prime Minister. Great to have Michaelia Cash.
Although the Deputy Prime Minister had complained about this issue earlier in October, and the Prime Minister had warned that they were considering this sort of legislation.
Tell me about the announcement. What did they say about it?
So they announced social media anti-trolling legislation was how it was billed. The Prime Minister said he wanted to introduce legislation to help combat some really big issues about online safety, especially for women and kids.
As a parent talking to other parents, I can tell you the thing that concerns us is that our kids are dealing with an online world which we never knew as kids growing up and that we never had experience of.
One of the examples he gave was the anonymous trolling of women online. You know, we've seen plenty of high-profile examples of women quitting social media after facing torrents of abuse. And this is part of the fix.
There is no place for people to be anonymously going around and undertaking this horrific abuse and harassment and stalking online. And so that's why our government has taken an important decision to be introducing legislation in addition to all the other legislation we have already introduced and is coming into effect. And it will do a number of things. And I'll ask the attorney to go into more detail.
Right, so we know that trolling and harassment online are really serious issues, but this exposure draft that was released last week has been the subject of pretty fierce criticism and a lot of scrutiny and debate. You've been looking pretty closely at it. Just broadly, does it do everything it says on the tin and everything that the Prime Minister says it will do?
Well, yes and no. It creates a better process for people to make complaints about abusive comments online, but there are still a lot of hurdles for a complainant to jump through. So if you're thinking of it as a solution to the problem of online trolling, it's a very partial one. And on top of that, it would appear the biggest beneficiaries are media companies.
Okay, I want to dig into why that is, but let's just start with what is in this exposure draft. What are the main things we need to know about it, Paul?
There are two main areas that the legislation is looking at. One is a tweak to the law as a result of the High Court decision in the Voller defamation case. And the second is creating a few pathways to combat anonymous trolling. And to be clear, what we're talking about here when we say anonymous trolling is the harmful comments made online, usually on social media, by someone you can't easily identify.
Okay, so let's start with the first thing that you mentioned, this Voller case. It's a very famous case. What do people need to know about it?
So in July 2017, Dylan Voller, a young Indigenous man who is at the heart of a Four Corners investigation into abuse in youth detention, sued news companies Fairfax and News Corp. And he was suing them for comments by third-party Facebook users on the Facebook pages run by the media companies, which his lawyers said caused him extreme emotional and mental distress.
Right, and just to be clear, so they're posting stories about what happened to Dylan Voller. People are commenting online on, say, Fairfax's Facebook page, and he's suing
the media companies about those comments. Is that right, Paul?
Yes, the media companies run their social media pages like Facebook. They post a story to Facebook about Dylan Voller. Then other Facebook users come along and allegedly defame Voller in the comments to that post, and Voller sues the companies who posted their own stories to social media.
Right, tell me about what he was suing them over specifically.
Voller was suing the media companies by arguing that they were publishers of the defamatory comments that were made by other users. Fairfax and News Corp argued they couldn't be sued for this kind of thing because they weren't the publishers. But they lost on that point when the High Court ruled that media companies were publishers and could be held liable for other users' comments on the social media posts. Although the case continues, and they will argue the defence of innocent dissemination.
In the meantime, though, a lot of people who work outside the media may not be aware that this has had an enormous impact on how media companies run their day-to-day. There is a lot of concern about the comments that are being made under posts on social media. Is that right, Paul?
Absolutely. So some international media companies like CNN turned all the comments off on their Facebook page. Here in Australia, Michael Miller, the executive chairman of News Corp Australia, said the decision was significant for anyone who maintains a public social media page by finding they can be liable for comments posted by others on that page, even when they're unaware of those comments. And he said that showed the need for urgent legislative reform. But Voller's lawyers said after the decision that media companies should monitor public comments, and it was important that they were liable as publishers. In any case, the federal government was concerned about the High Court decision and said that it threatened ordinary Australians and businesses with social media pages because it meant they could also be sued for comments on their pages, and it would therefore have a chilling effect on free speech. And it gives the example of something like a busy cafe owner who doesn't have the capacity to moderate comments on her page promoting her cafe.
Right, they're worried that someone in that situation could be more easily sued for defamation and probably not be able to afford it, I imagine.
Yeah, yes. The important thing to remember is that it's not just big media companies that run social media pages. I mean, almost every, you know, hospitality and retail business has a presence online, including on social media, and community groups as well that aren't run for profit and are run by volunteers.
So how is this bill designed to address this issue that was raised in the Voller case?
The bill deals with this issue by stating that an Australian person or company with a social media page is not the publisher of these types of comments. Instead, it deems the social media company the publisher, although it does give them a defence under defamation law, which we'll talk about shortly.
Just on the liability of media companies, you know, for example, The Guardian or News Corp, does that mean that when this bill, if this bill is passed, these media companies won't need to employ someone for comment moderation for social media? They don't really need to worry about the comments as much anymore?
Well, social media page operators may still moderate the comments for other reasons, including their own reputation. But defamation liability being removed does decrease the financial incentive to do that. Professor David Rolfe, a defamation expert at the University of Sydney, told Guardian Australia that deeming any organisation, irrespective of their size, as not liable for third-party comments on their social media pages has the effect of alleviating any media organisation from an obligation of content moderation, basically arguing, why would they bother? Why would they pay people to delete the comments if they're never going to be found to be the publisher?
Right. What does this mean for social media companies? Does this mean that they, in turn, have to have a much higher level of scrutiny on really every comment that is made on their platforms?
To an extent. What it would do is force companies to improve their existing compliance processes, which in some cases can be quite arduous, and instead to meet certain rules in the bill.
Tell me about the existing processes that social media companies have right now to complain about comments.
Well, social media companies try and filter out some abusive comments that breach their rules, but really they don't want to have to be monitoring every comment either. There are also ways to get comments taken down. For example, Facebook has a form for people to fill out when they believe they've been defamed, so users can ask for the allegedly defamatory comments to be removed, although lawyers describe the process as cumbersome. And Twitter's process requires law enforcement or other authorities to request allegedly defamatory content to be removed or ask for information that must come with a court order to remove them. So this bill essentially requires social media companies to streamline this complaints process and make it easier for people to complain. And there is an incentive to do that written into the bill. Essentially, all that legal liability that we just spoke about, the risk for companies like Facebook getting sued for every comment that's made on the platform, that goes away. And that's because the bill gives social media companies a defense under defamation law if they just streamline the complaints process.
Mm-hmm. What do we know about what is required in terms of this complaints procedure that they now need to have in place?
Well, the first thing is they actually have to set up shop in Australia, because the problem at the moment is that a lot of these international tech giants that don't have much of an operation in Australia, and so it's very hard to make orders enforceable against them. So the bill requires social media companies with more than 250,000 Australian users to have a nominated entity in Australia that will comply with these obligations. And the Attorney General can add to that list of companies through regulation as well.
Mm.
And there are fines of up to $550,000 for companies that refuse to comply, with a further penalty every day they continue to refuse.
So social media companies essentially have to make sure they have a representative in Australia to deal with complaints about defamatory, anonymous trolling. How will those complaints be handled?
The bill is quite prescriptive in that the complaints process must allow a user to complain to a social media company, and the company then has 72 hours to take that complaint to the commenter. Social media companies can remove the comment and identify the commenter, but only if they provide their consent. So it is possible for the person who's allegedly trolled you or defamed you to block that request. After they've got a response, the companies must inform the complainant of the outcome.
Right, so there's just an avenue where the person who might be anonymously trolling you might get a call from Facebook saying, hey, we want you to take this down. But the person who's allegedly trolling can say no. That seems like an easy out for them.
I think the hope is that when they get this notice from the social media company, they will agree to have it taken down, because that's the simplest solution.
Mm.
But if they don't agree to that, it doesn't have to come down. And if they don't agree to their details being released, then they're not necessarily unmasked either.
But Paul, what happens then if a person doesn't consent to having their identity shared with the complainant?
If the complainant isn't happy with the outcome of the complaint, then there's a second avenue to apply to a court for an end user disclosure order.
Mm.
Basically, if they can't get the contact details or work out if the commenter is in Australia, and the court agrees that they do or could have a claim for defamation, the court can require the disclosure of the user's country, whether they're in Australia or not, and contact details, including name, email, and phone number.
So, Paul, I imagine the purpose of unveiling the identity of an anonymous commenter is so that they can be sued in court for defamation over the comment. But how many people are realistically going to pursue this all the way to court?
Well, for most people, going to court is a big deal. It costs a lot of money to go to court. You've got to pay solicitors and barristers to turn up and argue your case. And usually the way it works is the winner has their costs paid for by the loser. And the risk of having to pay tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars, depending on what sort of case, can dissuade people from even trying in the first place.
Mm.
The solution in the bill is that the Attorney General can authorise the Commonwealth to pay the applicant's costs if the case helps settle an uncertain area of law, or it would assist a section of the public that is socially or economically disadvantaged.
Mm. How do they decide on that, whose case they might help out with? I mean, what's the definition for socially or economically advantaged, and who makes that decision?
Well, it seems to be at the Attorney General's discretion, but I think they have in mind not fueling an individual beef, but clarifying when these orders can be given would have a knock-on benefit to other people in a similar situation. So, you know, people experiencing family violence would be a pretty good case to help them out.
But I suppose quite tricky to figure out, right, whether the government will fund the case of an Indigenous rights activist versus the case of, you know, someone in the Christian lobby. It's quite tricky, I imagine.
Yeah, I think that those are definitely the sort of problems that it would throw up to have a discretion over who they can help in this sort of area.
Next, who this bill actually protects.
I want to ensure our kids are safe. I want to ensure that women are safe. This is an issue that I know is talked about in almost, if not every family in the country. We are all concerned about the impact that social media is having on our families, on our communities, on our society. And we're taking action, world-leading action.
So, Paul, Scott Morrison has been talking about this legislation quite a bit over the past week. He's been framing it as something that will protect the most vulnerable victims of online trolling, specifically women and young people. He's talked about it being good for youth mental health, a solution in an incredibly fraught field there. Will it? Will it actually do what he's saying?
Well, anonymous abuse is only one of the problems on social media or causes of poor mental health. Mm. And as my colleague Josh Taylor has written about, you know, Twitter said in November this year, before the release of this draft bill, that, you know, cracking down on anonymous accounts on the platform would be ineffective and fail to reduce the amount of abuse on the platform. They released research in August about racist abuse on the platform towards English players during the Euro 2020 final, and that found 99% of the accounts that were banned for more than 1,600 tweets of abuse were not anonymous.
So this bill may not actually address the bulk of the abuse that occurs online.
Yeah, a lot of abuse online is not anonymous. Not if it's, you know, someone in your class. Mm. Not if it's a person using their own name directing racist or sexist abuse at someone else. There are lots of cases that we already know who they are. It's just that they feel licensed to say something.
Mm. This was echoed in an opinion piece by Yasmin Abdel-Majid in The Guardian last week. She said, in her situation, and in many situations, the worst bullies in Australia are not anonymous trolls, but those in power who do not wish to be challenged. And she's spoken about some concerns that I've heard from quite a few people lately, that this bill would actually make it easier for politicians, the wealthy and the influential, to silence their critics online. What do you think of that idea, Paul?
It definitely provides a mechanism to scare an anonymous commenter into agreeing to take it down.
Mm-hmm.
And an extra avenue to find out who that person is. So imagine if you were, you know, a public servant who, because of your employment contract, you can't criticise the government, but you engage in anti-government advocacy and were using an anonymous account, you'd probably find it pretty scary if you got a message from a social media company saying, you know, will you agree to take this down? Because otherwise there's a process whereby, you know, the person you're criticising could go to a court to identify you.
Mm. It's not just public servants, right? I can think of a few examples like sex workers or whistleblowers who may have very valid reasons for hiding their name or location on the internet. Are there safeguards for people like that in this bill?
Yes. To prevent abuse of the system, social media companies are only required to act if the defamation claim appears genuine. And courts may refuse an end-user disclosure order if disclosure is likely to present a risk to the commenter's safety. Professor Rolfe said the safeguard is limited, though, because it's only the safety of the commenter. But in some circumstances, identifying an anonymous person making allegations, such as a claim of family violence, might put others at risk, like family members.
So, Paul, surely a really big consideration in all this is that it is wealthy and powerful people who overwhelmingly sue people for defamation in Australia already. Does this bill make defamation action even easier for the powerful?
Well, hopefully the way they've written the rules about who can have their cases funded by the Commonwealth will mean that it won't be the wealthy and powerful using taxpayer money to pursue cases. But it definitely does give them an easier way to start a case, to find out the identity of their detractors and to make those sorts of orders more enforceable against social media companies that otherwise might be able to rely on the fact that they're based offshore to just not engage with this sort of process.
Surely Australia isn't the first country that's tried to fix this problem of online trolling and anonymous online trolling. Are there better rules covering this area of the internet that have been legislated in other countries?
I think there are two broad ways to tackle the problem. One is to try and make social media companies responsible for the content of what other people are saying. So creating a duty of care to their users or fining them if they don't take down certain posts. The other is not to make them responsible for the content, but to make them responsible to have a process for evaluating complaints. And we've tried to do a bit of a mix of both of those, but arguably other alternatives go harder in making them responsible for the content. In Germany, companies like social media platforms can be fined up to 50 million euros if they don't delete posts containing racist, defamatory or otherwise illegal speech within 24 hours.
So, Paul, as you've mentioned, this bill is currently being proposed. It's in a draft form. What's likely to happen from here? When could it actually be put to Parliament?
Well, the government's also having an inquiry into social media companies, so there'll be a lot of focus on them in the next few months, in addition to consulting about this draft bill. But it's the sort of thing that could really fly through Parliament quite quickly with bipartisan support from Labor. So if Parliament comes back next year, it's possible this is passed before the election.
Right, we are leading into an election. Do you think the government is hoping a bill like this will be popular with voters?
Yeah, I think so. And it's not the only thing that they've done in this space. They also legislated powers for the eSafety Commissioner to order certain types of content to be taken down. And that, along with this anti-trolling bill, is sold as a way of making the internet safe for kids. Mm. It seems to be a consistent concern of the government that they hear from parents, that they don't feel that their kids are safe online or they just don't know. So I think that they are very alive to that. And if they can bowl things up that look like it will solve that problem, that parents will reward them for that.
Right, so Paul, what would you tell parents and other people who are looking to this bill as a solution for online trolling?
Well, it's encouraging that the government is looking for a solution for this problem that a lot of parents do care deeply about. But I'd always encourage people to check how that announcements do what they say on the tin, and in this case, for parents to read the fine print.
Thanks to Guardian Australia's political reporter, Paul Karp, for his time. You can read more about the government's anti-trolling bill at theguardian.com, and we've put some links on the full story page as well. This episode was produced by Beth Atkinson-Quinton, Jane Lee and Melanie Tate. Sound design and mixing by Camilla Hannon. Full Story's executive producers are Gabrielle Jackson, Melanie Tate and me, Laura Murphy-Oates. Okay. Catch you tomorrow.